Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, Bet Smarter, Beat the Books, download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com, is Ben Brown. Ben used to be with PFF. I think we were aware, we just forgot, that he is now with ESPN Bet. But Ben is a big NFL guy and he joins us now. It's good to have you back, Ben. Appreciate it. You know, let's just start with the six quarterbacks. Do you have an opinion one way or the other based on the situations and based on the quarterbacks, the six that got taken in the top 12, who should play and who shouldn't? And I guess we can now... It's four, right? Because Penix Jr. and McCarthy are not in this conversation. So let's take Daniels, May, and then Nix, and who am I forgetting right now?
The star, Caleb Williams.
Yeah, Caleb Williams, my fault. I started at number two. Caleb, Jaden, May, and Bo Nix. Who should start based on their readiness and the situation that they're in?
Yeah, I mean, I think at least kind of starting at the top, you know, Williams and Jaden Daniels, I think, you know, obviously going one and two, I think in a lot of ways went to, probably the best situation of the four quarterbacks that we're discussing right now. I think maybe you could make a case for, you know, JJ McCarthy with what he has as far as weapons around him. Obviously, the injury situation with him kind of puts that out the door. But I think Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams should be starting from day one. We've heard that that's true. I think it very much fits. I do think in some ways, you know, especially Caleb, going to the situation with the Chicago Bears, getting that number one overall draft pick to a trade, like it wasn't as bad of a situation that he stepped into that a lot of other number one overall picks, kind of had to deal with. So from that perspective, I just don't think, you know, there's really any benefit in not figuring out what you have with that guy right away. I just think in general, the onus should be on a team to start their rookie quarterback right away. I think the downside risk of sitting him, especially for a year, you just don't get to take advantage of that rookie contract type scale. I think even if you look at situations around the league where that has developed further, you know, obviously we're not talking about, you know, sixth and seventh round draft picks right now, but I think in a situation with a guy like Brock Purdy, he's so much more valuable on that rookie deal and having that extended window, although it hasn't resulted in championships for the San Francisco 49ers, has very much kind of like maximized their overall Super Bowl window and has led to them, you know, being in that conversation for a number of years. So I think just in general, finding out what you have in that rookie guy is what teams should be doing. And especially this season, I very much think the Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels situations that they're arriving in makes it kind of a slam dunk for them to start. Now when we start to talk about guys like Drake May, who, you know, very much could be going to maybe like the worst overall offense in football, you know, him starting right away, I think there has to be genuine concerns about his actual development in a situation where he's not going to have a ton of opportunities to play with guys, that are quality type receivers, alpha number one type receivers, and really doesn't have a ton, I would say, around him to really, I would say, lift him up. So I think, you know, Drake May is kind of a question. To me, you know, Bo Nix, I think just in general, the Denver Broncos are in a situation where they have to kind of hit on that quarterback position to get out from what they gave Russell Wilson. In order to do that, they do have to figure out what they have in Bo Nix right away. And I do think, you know, just in general, I do think he has a little bit of a better supporting cast around him in Denver than what Drake May has. So I think from an argument standpoint, I very much get why Drake May should be sitting potentially even half to a full season. And I very much think that the rest of those three guys should be playing and should be playing from week one, in my opinion.
Is the primary reason for your belief that they should be playing the, you know, leveraging that rookie deal and getting to it sooner than later? Because, like, I think back, and correct me if I'm wrong, and Denton, you might know the answer to this. I think Bradford was the last of the non-rookie wage scale number one. It was either him or Stafford. Was it Bradford?
It was Bradford, yeah. He kind of, like, broke it, basically, at that point. And then they changed it the next year, basically. Yeah.
So if we didn't have a rookie wage scale, do you think the overall opinion of most in the league would be to sit these quarterbacks and let them, you know, watch for a half of a year or a full season before playing them?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that that is, you know, very much what kind of changed the calculus of the equation. But yeah, I think if it wasn't for the rookie wage enactment and we were still negotiating these picks and we were hitting some of these outlandish numbers that we got with, you know, the Sam Bradfords of the world, like that is when the discussion changes to, okay, we absolutely have to be correct that this guy is the guy when we're paying him this much money. Let's do everything we can from a development standpoint in order to facilitate that. And I think it still probably is a little bit more of a situation by situation basis, but I think there's a lot more opportunities for a guy to get into the right system and learn from a veteran quarterback in year one, and then really be that guy in year two. And I think in some ways that actually probably does help the overall development from a quarterback. But unfortunately, with the direction that we've gone from the salary cap standpoint, rookie wage scale, everything else, like, we have to understand what we have in this guy right away, because the shift is so dramatic going from that rookie deal to a $55 million a year player. And when that happens, the entire framework of your team shifts. And I think that's the reason why starting these guys and getting information right away, and also knowing that, you know, if you do miss on a top end draft pick, it might not be as detrimental as it once was. You know, because you're not paying them quite as much money as you were when you had, you know, Sam Bradford contracts.
Yeah, of course. And that was the idea, that along with getting, you know, more money to more of the veteran players. But you know what's interesting, Ben, is, and I don't have it in front of me, but I did this a few years ago. In fact, I did it when Washington drafted Dwayne Haskins, and there was a lot of discussion on whether or not he was ready to play or not. The truth was he wasn't ready to play. But I went back and looked basically at like 10 years worth of first-round quarterbacks. And the bottom line is, taking Mahomes out of the equation, if you didn't start by week five of your rookie season, it was more likely than not because you weren't very good. And you didn't turn out to be very good. The guys that turned out to be good started right from the jump. But the impetus for starting them, and certainly we started to see that after the rookie wage scale was implemented. What are your expectations for Jaden Daniels this year?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I know it's not just, you know, a fantasy discussion, but I think like he could be, you know, one of the most productive quarterbacks from a fantasy standpoint, with both the rushing and the passing type situation. To me, I am, you know, I would say I'm very much intrigued by the weapons around him. Again, kind of going back to like the Caleb Williams versus Jaden Daniels comparison. To me, I think Caleb Williams has a better, you know, obviously receiving unit, but there is some opportunities for, you know, Daniels to kind of figure this out and figure it out quickly. I think, you know, McLaurin, obviously well-established, is kind of just been waiting for that bona fide, you know, I would say quarterback to unlock him. So I think he is, you know, very much in this conversation of a guy that can elevate Jaden Daniels. You know, what they kind of do in the slot has been interesting, I would say, from a preseason standpoint. It does seem like Jahan Dotson is going to be the guy in three receiver sets to move into the slot. I think that does put, you know, a ton of pressure on him developing. I think if you were, you know, to ask, you know, Commanders fans, you know, based on his, you know, performance last season, like how much should we buy into that? I think he's going to be kind of the key to what they need to do offensively. And if he is good, I think overall the Washington Commanders are at least going to be in the conversation for a playoff spot in the NFC. And I think if you look around the NFC East, you know, there are reasons why we shouldn't buy into the top dogs like the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. And for that reason, I think there's, you know, quite a bit of optimism to be played for the Commanders figuring this out in year one with Dan Quinn, new quarterback, new coach, everything kind of hitting right. And I think it very much, you know, outside of Jaden Daniels, is going to be key to how they kind of develop that slot position and then how Cliff Kingsbury kind of unlocks the rest of the offense. But I think they have what it takes offensively. And then, you know, we'll really see, you know, what happens coming up here in a couple of weeks. But I very much think that the expectation should be, you know, the Commanders, you know, should at least be in the thick of it. And if they can win some games down the stretch, could be one of those teams kind of sneaking into the playoffs for sure.
I mean, I kind of feel the same way, and I'm typically, and haven't been for good reason, been very optimistic in recent years, but I'm much more optimistic this year. So I would assume that one of your, you know, a favorite season total bet is Washington over 6.5.
Yeah, I think it's very reasonable. I think even like them to get into the playoffs at like +320 or something is a, you know, a somewhat intriguing longer shot opportunity. But Like, we've seen, you know, I don't want to always draw the comparison to it, but, like, we've seen a dynamic, you know, quarterback, what he can do, I would say, both rushing the football and throwing it. And I think with what kind of what they've built, you know, along the offensive line, I think it's intriguing. To me, I would kind of like to see, you know, Ben Snott maybe unlocked a little bit more at that slot position if, you know, Jahan Dotson isn't the guy. But to me, I think overall, like, there's a case and a reason to be optimistic about this development. And if you buy into Jaden Daniels, them to go over 6.5 is a good bet. Them to get into the playoffs at, you know, +310, +320, it is also very justifiable if you want a little bit of a longer shot opportunity, for sure.
All right, so let's stay in the NFC and in the NFC East in particular. You've, you know, already kind of made reference to Philadelphia and their situation. Who do you like to win the NFC East?
Yeah, I mean, and this is probably, I do think it's probably the most difficult division to handicap for
What's
me right
Washington
now.
Right now to win the division? Like +700, +800, something like that?
Yeah, let me pull it up. I do have it here. I just got to scroll down. Why am I not tuned? Yeah, they're +11. So they're 11-1 right now.
Wow.
The Eagles are, you know, -140 basically. You know, obviously, you know, over 50% opportunity. The Cowboys are +175. You know, people don't buy into, you know, the Cowboys offseason. I think, you know, just to start with the Cowboys, maybe, like, I think there is, and I don't know everyone's going to say it right now, but there is, you know, a pretty clear path to things going off the rails with how they've kind of constructed this team and, you know, what they've done with negotiations with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb, like how top heavy they kind of have become as well. Like, I think defensively they'll be there, but, you know, offensively, like, one injury could kind of derail this entire season. I know that's, you know, a common refrain for a lot of teams, but it just seems like there's so much chaos happening with Dallas in particular this particular season that there's more of a wider range of outcomes for how potentially poor they could actually be. And I think that's maybe, you know, the discussion point with the NFC East right now. And then, you know, to go to the Philadelphia Eagles, like, you know, I think last year at this time, people, you know, that were kind of front forward looking were, you know, right in the fact that, like, the Eagles were potentially going to struggle in the loss of both of their offensive coordinators and both of their coordinators going to head coaching type positions. And I know they've kind of, you know, readjusted both offensive and defensive coordinator this offseason, but to me, I'm not convinced that they still have the right pieces in place. And I think, you know, what the value is from an offensive defensive coordinator, the quality that they can actually bring, I think it's still maybe a little bit misunderstood. And I think for that reason, you know, we shouldn't expect the Eagles just to be back to where they were two seasons ago after bringing in Kellen Moore, you know, and kind of trying to figure out those sorts of things. So I don't want to say that the Eagles won't end up winning the division. I just think that, you know, over a 50% implied probability right now, I think there's at least a case to be made for them not getting to that sort of expectation here in 2024.
We're talking to Ben Brown from ESPN Bet. You can follow Ben on X on Twitter at Ben_R_Brown_. So let's stay in the NFC overall. Give me the, you know, the things that you feel most strongly about in terms of season totals, whether it's over a total or under a total.
Yeah, it's a good question. I do, I would say, probably still buy into the hype of the Detroit Lions, you know, 10.5 games. I think they're going to end up being probably the class of the NFC when it's all said and done, be the team that represents the NFC in the Super Bowl. So I do like them to go over 10.5. Their win total, I think in a lot of ways, if you are looking to bet unders, you know, the AFC is very much the direction to go. I do think there are going to be, you know, just some teams that are going to have, you know, really weird outcomes in the NFC. So I think even a team like the Seattle Seahawks, I know their over 7.5 win total is kind of juiced up a decent amount, but they're a team, Mike McDonald's first season. I like where they have drafted at the past couple seasons. I think now is kind of the time where a new coach can potentially put all those pieces in place. You know, what are they going to get from Geno Smith is obviously going to be a question, but I still think they have talent at the wide receiver position. And if you do think, you know, the 49ers in particular, a team that maybe doesn't get to that 11.5 game win total, I think the Seahawks are a pretty strong correlation and a correlated play to kind of go over their number. So
more so than the 49ers, Rams.
Yeah, I guess probably both are a good opportunity. I think maybe, you know, it's a similar proposition for the Seahawks or the Rams, but me, I do like the 49ers to go under. I think there are a number of situations that could go awry. To me, I think Trent Williams is, you know, the most valuable player on that team. He's getting up there in age. I think when he ends up, you know, eventually retiring, that's probably really when that championship window for the 49ers closes. But an injury, you know, in the right situation to them, I think it is gonna lead them astray. And I do think the Seahawks and the Rams in particular, and also the Cardinals, are all going to probably benefit if they're not, you know, living up to that 11.5 game win expectation for sure.
All right, let's go to the AFC. What are your best over under season total bets there?
Yeah, it's I do think I know it's probably fading, you know, popular consensus, but I do think that the what I would classify as like the bottom two teams in the AFC North are going to struggle more than what we'd expect. So the Cleveland Browns to go under 8.5 wins. That's a plus price right now. I think that's pretty decent, you know, spot to get involved in what is going to be a really difficult overall division in a really difficult overall conference. Similar sentiment with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think longer term, we are going to see Justin Fields potentially be the starter for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But for that, in order to happen, we're going to need to see probably more of the same from Russell Wilson. And I think if that start is how the season kind of starts off, you know, the Steelers to get over 8.5, it is going to be a really difficult proposition. So I do think the Steelers and the Browns in particular, given where they sit at, you know, given what the quarterback situation is kind of like.
Is that a minus price on the under for them? I would assume it is.
Yeah, it's a pretty heavy minus price. I think it's like minus 140 right now, minus 145 for the Steelers to go under. But yeah, that's an aggressive one. But I do think, you know, even those teams at a decent minus price to miss the playoffs, are also pretty good spots to look at for sure.
If I told you Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, neither one was the MVP this upcoming season, who would it be?
I would definitely go with CJ Stroud. I am buying into the hype. I know they're the most popular team, coming into the regular season from the off season, but I think this is what you do with a guy that you know you've hit on from a rookie wage standpoint and kind of going back to that. And you do go all in, and they have, I would say, you know, kind of unlocked everything to put all the pieces in place, both offensively and defensively. And yes, there is, you know, quite a bit of opportunity for CJ Stroud to regress, especially from, you know, the interception and turnover-worthy play type rate and some more of those, you know, poor passes that he did have last season actually resulting in interceptions. But I think there is still an upside case to be made. And if we aren't talking about Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, I very much think the third best player and the third most likely would be CJ Stroud to win the MVP in that sort of scenario.
Man, that'd be incredible. Year two, second year, offensive rookie of the year one. That would be Marino-esque, I guess. Probably. Marino won it in the second year or third year? I think it was his second year. Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate it. Good work, and have fun at ESPN.
Thanks, guys. Have a great show, Kevin.
Yep, Ben Brown, everybody, from ESPN Bet. Jeff Ehrman will talk Terps football with us next, and then our friend Sam Monson, who used to be with PFF but is now with the 33rd team, will join us after that. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com. Jumping on with me right now is our friend Jeff Ehrman from 24/7 Sports and also InsideMDSports.com. Jeff covers Maryland sports like no one else does. At Jeff_Ehrman, Ehrmann, on X on Twitter. So I'm going to tell you that I have not paid attention as closely to the upcoming Maryland football season as I have the last few years, in part because the Lua Tagovailoa era is over, and he was sort of a constant here the last few years, and you knew they'd be good offensively, and they're coming off three straight bowl seasons and three straight bowl wins, including last year against Auburn in bowl season in the Music City Bowl down in Nashville. So just, you know, start by just telling me what this team looks like right now heading into the season. I know that they're favored in their first several games, but what are we expecting from Maryland football this year?
Well, first, Kevin, I'll say you're not alone in the first part. For whatever reason, the fan engagement has not seemed to quite correlate with the improved results, you know, on and off the field. Recruiting, Maryland's having its best recruiting cycle in quite a while right now. But yeah, I think there's a lot to be excited about. I think Mike Locksley has, you know, stocked the program really well. You might not have that brand name star player like Leah the past few years, but I think there's more talent and depth and size across the board. He's really focused on building depth. So, you know, with the obvious caveat that two of the most important positions on the field, quarterback and offensive line, are still to be determined in terms of, you know, both personnel and how good they are. I think that they are a really deep, one of the deepest teams that they've had in a while.
So let's start with quarterback, where the Leah Tagovailoa era is over after four seasons in College Park, including that first year, which was a COVID-shortened year. Who's in line to replace him when we get to a week from Saturday, August 31st, against UConn?
My guess is Billy Edwards. I think that, you know, he'll get a shot to go out there and prove that he can be the guy, prove that he can, you know, pass well enough to be the guy. That's obviously the biggest question everybody has about him. Like you mentioned, he's been more of a short yardage running specialist who's only played in a normal role a handful of times, normally when forced into the role by injury. But, you know, they like him a lot. He's the leader of the team. You know, they feel like, I think people, the rest of the players will rally around him. Obviously, if he's the guy, you're going to go with a little more of a running, heavy approach, power running game, read option to try to set up the pass, because he's a tough, hard-nosed runner who's shown that he can get it done, you know, with his legs. The question, obviously, is the arm. So I would say my guess is that it's Billy, and then MJ Morris, the transfer from NC State, and Cam Edge, the younger guy with probably the strongest arm out of the three of them, but, you know, who needs to kind of prove his ability to make things happen with his legs and pocket presence. So that would be my guess right now.
They always seem to be pretty loaded, pretty talented at the skill position spots on offense. So take us through running back and wide receiver on this team.
I like what they've got at those spots. You know, Roman Hemby 2 years ago nearly rushed for 1,000 yards as a redshirt freshman. Last year his production fell off a little bit, but, you know, either way, he's proven himself as not only as productive, but a guy who can hit the home run fairly regularly. Nolan Ray, a younger guy behind him, probably out of all the young guys who haven't really played, he's the one, you know, attracting or generating the most buzz out of anybody, maybe the fastest guy on the team. I think there'll be a lot of people wondering where he came from this year. And then a receiver, you've got, I think, one of the better, you know, not the top, but a really good wide receiver 1-2 punch with Ty Felton and Caden Prather. You know, both were in the top 15 or 20 in the Big Ten in a lot of categories last year. The ball was spread around a little bit more, so neither one of them has racked up, you know, all Big Ten kind of statistics, but both of them are really good. That's a good combo. And then behind them, there's some young talent, but guys that need to kind of prove themselves now, most notably Octavian Smith and Chalik Knotts, a couple of four stars going into their third year.
You say the offensive line's a concern. How much of it is new?
The whole thing. the whole thing. All five are gone from last year, so it's maybe the first time I've seen them have to replace all five. I'm sure it's happened before at some point, but you know, they're relying on a lot of new guys. Alan Heron, transfer from a Division II school in Georgia. They like him a lot. He was committed to Penn State. Maryland flipped him on signing day. Andre Roy, tackle from Baltimore. Actually, coincidentally, another guy they flipped from Penn State. You know, he's had the past 2 years to kind of put on some bulk. He was a basketball player before transitioning to football at St. Francis Academy. They've been raving about him. Center Josh Kaltenberger, Purdue transfer, has been the guy since he arrived. I think he'll be an upgrade. The, you know, center was not a strength last year. And then there are some questions at guard. I think that's where the most questions are.
I know they've got some talent defensively, and there are fewer questions on that side of the ball than on the offensive side of the ball. Take us through the defense. Where is the strength? Let's start there.
Yeah, the defensive line is many times more proven than the offensive line. I mean, I think this is probably you know, this could be the deepest defensive line they've had since those Friedan years, which, as you know, is somehow 20 years ago already. But, you know, they're stacked there. Jordan Phillips, defensive tackle, he could be an all Big Ten kind of guy, just a mountain at 6'2", 330. Tommy King Bisotte, similar size next to him. The list goes on. They're just loaded. You know, there's not necessarily a superstar in the mix. I think Donnell Brown, an edge rusher who transferred in last year, could be that guy. But the amount of size and depth and maturity they have there is really impressive.
All right, so let's talk about what you're expecting. I mean, I mentioned that, you know, their first six games right now, at least on paper, they're likely favored in their first six games. They play UVA in Charlottesville, but UVA is supposed to be awful in the ACC. They've got a game against Michigan State in week two, but they're not supposed to be great. So, I mean, given the schedule, do you think this is another 7, 8, 9 win potential team and another bowl season? What are you expecting?
I think it definitely has that potential, Kevin. The thing is that this has got to be the hardest team to project for them in years,
right?
Because, you know, Talia's gone after what feels like a decade. You're replacing it. You know, you're pretty talented overall, but the two big positions, obviously, offensive line and quarterback, are question marks. That said, I think they, you know, the culture and the expectations and the talent level have all risen to a point where even if you don't know what you're going to get there, you still expect at least, you know, 7 wins in a bowl game.
All right. UConn, a week from Saturday in College Park. Their first two are at home, so get tickets. They're available. They play Michigan State week two out in College Park. But I'm going to ask you, even though we are a couple of months away, I actually am surprised that Maryland hasn't been in more preseason, you know, all too early top 25s. They've been in a few of them, but not as many as I thought. I think they've got a good team on paper heading into 24-25. What do you think?
Well, first off, I respect that you held out like 9 minutes until you started with basketball. I know that took some restraint, but no, I mean, I think, you know, they have talent, they have the potential to be that kind of top 25 team, but there's just so many unproven pieces. I mean, really, you look at it, Julian Reese is the only proven high-level Big Ten player on the whole team. You know, so you brought in some transfers who should be really good, especially Jacoby Gillespie, the point guard from Belmont. There's been a lot of talk about Felton Miguel, the South Florida transfer, who, you know, has been reported on many times, grew up with Bruno Fernando in Angola. There's been a lot of talk that he's going to be really good. Obviously, Derek Queen, when you're getting the McDonald's All-American Game MVP, you should have high expectations. So, you know, the potential is there, but when you to get into that top 25, I think you need a few more proven guys, especially when you're coming off the kind of year that they had and you've lost a guy like Jameer Young.
In the Big Ten, like, who's supposed to be good going into this season? Purdue? Is that it? And obviously, they're kind of rebuilding.
Yeah, they are. I think Indiana could be pretty good. They've built up their roster pretty well. They have a very robust NIL operation there, one of the best in the country. So they're able to get a lot of talent. You know, there's not really a, you know, Michigan is rebuilding with a new coach, obviously. I don't think there's like a team that, like, entering last year where it's clearly head and shoulders above the rest like Purdue was.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, you know, lots of buzz about, you know, Rutgers and the recruiting class they have coming in.
Yeah.
But it's an odd year, I mean, in the Big Ten. It may be, at least, you know, heading in, the fewest number of teams kind of in the top 25 or in the top, you know, 15 that we've seen since, you know, we entered the Big Ten. All right. Thanks for doing this. Hope you're well. And we'll talk, I'm sure, right when the season begins.
Sounds great, Kevin. Thanks.
Jeff Ehrman, everybody, at Jeff_Ehrman on X on Twitter. All right, next, Sam Monson, who was with PFF right from the start, is now at the 33rd team. We'll talk NFL with Sam next.
Rough night for the Nationals last night. They fall to the Rockies 3-1. DJ Hertz pitched 5 2/3, allowing all three of the Rockies runs on 6 hits while striking out 7. CJ Abrams homered in the 6th inning. It's his 18th of the year. That's the most on the team. They're back at it today at 6:45. Mitchell Parker going to be on the mound for the Nats. Mystics fall to the Seattle Storm at 83-77. Ariel Atkins led the team with 25 points. Shakir Austin added 24 points and 9 rebounds. In a little bit of football, or I guess retired football coach news, Pete Carroll's making his return to USC to teach. He announced it on a radio show in Seattle, but he didn't say what class or what courses he would be teaching at USC. And that's what's trending.
This segment coming up is sponsored by Floor and Decor. Unbeatable prices, unmatched in stock selection. Floor and Decor has more styles of laminate, vinyl, tile, wood, and stone. For anybody looking for the right look at the right price, that is. Your next beautiful space is at Floor and Decor. Jumping on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is Sam Monson. We've had Sam on the show many times. Sam was literally there, ground floor, when PFF launched many years ago, and he is leaving PFF to join the 33rd team. First of all, I guess congratulations are in order. That had to be tough because you and I have talked about this before. You were literally one of the first people there and helped build PFF. So just, if you can, share with us, the move and the reasons for it.
Yeah, definitely tough. I mean, we did our last show today on the PFF NFL podcast, myself and Steve, and it was kind of like a history show of PFF and revisiting those early times and where it came from to where it is now. Definitely a crazy ride. I mean, I started doing stuff for PFF back in 2008, and I mean, it wasn't a company then. It was kind of like a financed hobby that Neil Hornsby had set up and eventually became this crazy preeminent analytics company that's in every, all 32 front offices, all FBS team front offices, and is really everywhere. We didn't think we'd ever be leaving, but we get this great opportunity from the 33rd team. We're able to kind of restart our show and get, real ownership over it and take it in a kind of new and better direction. So an opportunity that we felt we couldn't really turn down, and one that got us to leave PFF.
Yeah, so this podcast will launch with Steve Palazzo, who you've been doing a podcast for a while, and what you just said, it's so important in that world to kind of own that IP and have a stake in that, and so congratulations on that. Just real quickly, when you got there, and I forget because you've told me before, but had you just come to the U.S. from Ireland, or had you been here for a while?
No, this was when I did the first sort of few years, several years actually, of work in Ireland.
That's right.
Moving to the States came relatively recently in the whole PFF saga. I moved over here in the summer of 2017. So from 08 to 17 was all in Ireland, flying in for certain things, making trips, but basically working from Ireland, and a lot of people were remote in the UK.
Yeah. I just got back, by the way, from my first trip to Ireland and absolutely loved it. Where are you from there?
Dublin. Dublin's where I'm from.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were in Dublin for a few days. Enjoyed it a lot. All right. Let's talk ball. What are your early impressions of Jaden Daniels and what he can be and what the team can be in 2024?
Yeah, I think early returns on Jaden Daniels have been fantastic. He looks great. We got to see a little bit more of him, obviously, in the second preseason game than we did in the first, but he looks efficient. It looks easy for him. And his ball location, I think, has been maybe the best of the young quarterbacks, just in terms of exactly where he's putting the football, not just hitting the right guy, but putting it on the correct shoulder or away from defenders' leverage, those kinds of things. The athleticism looks like it's going to play. They're using him in that area and giving him these read option plays. We've still seen, a play where he's not protected himself, that maybe, slide, you don't have to take a hit at the end of every single play. And that would be an area of concern for him given his college tape. But from a, can he handle it this level? Can he deliver the ball, execute the offense, throw it around efficiently? All of that, I think, looks good.
So what kind of team, what's best case, worst case for Washington this year?
Best case is, you know, Jaden Daniels looks spectacular. He's transformative because he's playing the most important position in the league. They have weaponry in terms of Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, De'Ami Brown, tight end, Zach Ertz. Like, this is a team that has the ability to make some noise as an offense. Dan Quinn has been a great defensive coach. He's done wonders in Dallas the last few years. If he's able to weave his magic quickly on the defensive side, they may be able to hold up their end of the bargain. And, you know, they could be a surprise package, maybe not a genuine contender, but really threaten the postseason, even in a tough division where we expect there to be at least two very good teams.
So what about the downside? What's the worst case?
The downside is there's so much change that it just takes a while to come together, you know, and it just doesn't gel year one, and we're almost treading water, or this is kind of a write-off season for next year to be the year where it really does start to pay dividends. But everything about this franchise has changed, you know, quarterback, coach, front office, so much personnel, a lot of kind of culture additions, guys coming in to just change the whole attitude of the place. So much change doesn't necessarily all come together right away. So there's definitely a world where it just doesn't quite, it's clunky, it doesn't quite all work year one. And, you know, next year is when we really start to see what happens.
You know, one of the things in kind of looking at their season total of 6.5, I mean, I like over. I actually think they could be one of the surprise, you know, sleeper teams. I think a lot of people have started to look at them as a potential, you know, not necessarily identical version of Houston from last year, but a team that, you know, threatens 9 wins and contention for, you know, that 6 or 7 spot wild card wise. But I was looking at something recently, Sam. Like, you know, if you consider a bad football team to be a 5-win team or less, pretty much every example for the last 5 years, it meant terrible quarterback play, you know, and I don't see that. I could see up and down quarterback play from Jaden Daniels, but I don't see with Kingsbury and some of the things they've got around him, I don't see it being bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to be a terrible football team if you have a good quarterback.
It really is.
And it's difficult, you know, quarterback can make that kind of transformational difference if you get the right guy. CJ Stroud showed that last season. Now, you can kind of hinder a really good quarterback by having a terrible situation around him, and maybe you don't get to see that that quarterback is great until he has the situation around him to function, but we just sort of went through it. I think that exists for Jaden Daniels. So if he's going to be the guy, there's no reason that can't function right away and from day one, at which point, yeah, I think you're right. Like, it means it's hard for this team to be truly terrible if Jaden Daniels looks like the answer right out of the gate.
Yeah, and even if he's not the answer, if he's typical rookie up and down, but, you know, that results in average, it is hard to be bad if you've got decent quarterback play or even average quarterback play. We're talking to Sam Monson. Sam's now with the 33rd team. And, you know, after years and years at PFF, pretty much helping to build it from the early days on. So I don't know how much you're paying attention to this, but Washington has that second spot on the waiver wire because of last year's record. You know, Carolina's got 1, Washington's got 2. And we're now into that, you know, third year, I think it is, of 90 down to 53 on one day, which is this coming Tuesday. Washington's had major kicker issues. They signed Brandon McManus. He had those personal issues. They cut him loose. Do you pay attention at all to what might be available at any position come Tuesday with teams cutting down from 90 to 53?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some useful players that are going to be cut loose. A lot of them, teams are going to try and play that game of, you know, can we expose this guy to the waiver wire and try and get him onto the practice squad, or will he be poached away and signed to an active roster? I think that's always a gamble. But there are teams that are really strong in certain positions, and they're going to have to let a good player go because they have too many bodies, you know, too many players for too few roster spots. And that does mean there are teams that claim those players and actually can significantly upgrade their roster, albeit, you know, lower down the depth chart or maybe with those specialists, but definitely upgrade based off these releases.
Yeah, and I think we've seen in recent years too, Sam, a willingness to add more players because there's more time between that final cutdown date and the regular season opener. It used to be that it was basically a week or 8 days or 9 days. Now it's, you know, basically 2 weeks plus before, or right around 2 weeks before the opener. All right, let's talk a little bit about the league. Is Kansas City better this year than they were last year?
Possibly. I think they may be better on offense and worse on defense. And whether or not that shakes out to a net positive from a year ago, I think is up in the air. But last season's offense was not particularly good for the majority of the season. They got better in the playoffs. Travis Kelce kind of turned it on once they hit the postseason. Mahomes generally has been pretty good at improving his play in the playoffs, as crazy as that is. But for most of the season, they were struggling at the wide receiver position and actually receiver overall because Kelce wasn't quite the same player for most of the year. So that was a grind for them. And really the emergence of Rashee Rice late in the year and into the postseason was a big part of saving them, as well as Kelce stepping it up in the playoffs. But this was a team that needed receiver upgrades. And obviously they went ahead and made that happen in the offseason, both in free agency with Hollywood Brown, and then Xavier Worthy in the draft. So they should be better. They've added a lot of speed. They should be a much more dangerous offense than they were a year ago. But they've lost some players on defense. Legarius Sneed was a big player for them. They were able to keep Chris Jones. But it's definitely, I think, difficult for them to repeat how good that defense was last season.
So if I told you right now they don't make it back to the Super Bowl, who in the AFC does?
I mean, for a couple of years now, the AFC has been so wide open. I think there's so many teams that could conceivably go on that run in the postseason and, you know, win four games, including a championship. Maybe Cincinnati would be the one that I would lean on because theoretically they're getting a healthy Joe Burrow again. Joe Burrow has been the quarterback that has been able to beat the Chiefs repeatedly. They're like one boneheaded play away from being undefeated against Kansas City, from knocking them off four straight times, I think. And really, we would be talking about Cincinnati has the Chiefs' number. Like, they're the team that is able to overcome that. So, you know, I think if we get Joe Burrow back healthy, if we get Ja'Marr Chase back in the building, I think the Bengals could definitely be the team to upset them in the playoffs.
How much pressure do you think there is on Lamar Jackson to get it done in the postseason this year? And by extension, and I've said this before because he's been, you know, Lamar's biggest fan and biggest supporter, John Harbaugh.
Yeah, I think Lamar and Dak Prescott are the two quarterbacks that this idea of them not being able to win in the playoffs is growing and becoming a bigger and bigger issue. And it's one that the only way of getting that monkey off your back is to win those playoff games. And neither one of those guys has been able to do that yet. You know, Lamar probably has an even more difficult task because he's in this AFC where we just talked about the gauntlet of good teams and how many teams are difficult to beat or capable of going on that run. So it may be more challenging for him to do it. But yeah, this is a two-time MVP now that needs to show that he can play his best games in the playoffs against the best opposition.
The Jets this year, if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy and plays like Aaron Rodgers, where do they end up?
That's the great question. I mean, we're going to get to see what we thought we were going to get to see last season. You know, Rodgers on the Jets, can he turn them into a genuine Super Bowl contender? Only now we have the added variable of a 40-year-old coming off an Achilles injury. I still think that if we get anything approximating a good version of a healthy Aaron Rodgers, they are a contender. You know, they're a playoff team. They're a team that should be able to win in the playoffs and are right in that mix of really good AFC teams that we talked about. They're capable of going through that gauntlet and making it through to that championship game.
Let's go to the NFC. Let's start in the division that Washington's in. Who do you like to win it?
I think Dallas probably ends up winning it. Ultimately, there's so much talent on that roster. I think they'll figure out the contract situations and whether or not they're playing in their last year, or they get them all under contract and everybody's happy long-term. I think the Cowboys are going to find a way of essentially maintaining what they did a year ago and heading the division.
In the NFC, San Francisco is the favorite. Do you think they get back to the Super Bowl and finally win it?
I think they certainly get back to the championship game. I think Detroit may give them a real fight and may challenge them. And they were a couple of plays away from it last year. Maybe this is the year it goes in a different direction and the Lions are the team to upset San Francisco along the way. But certainly the 49ers are going to be as good a team as anybody in the NFC.
Who wins the NFC South?
I think Atlanta does. I think as soon as they signed Kirk Cousins, they became the favorite for that division, both literally, you know, the Vegas line suggests that way. And also just from a subjective point of view, I think Cousins on that team makes them the best team in that division.
Who's a sleeper team in the NFC that nobody's talking about that you're bullish on?
I think Arizona could be. Kyler Murray, Marvin Harrison Jr. coming onto that team, that improves everything. That lets Michael Wilson take a step down the depth chart, and he was impressive last season. Now he doesn't have to be their number one guy. He can just beat up on number two corners. Trey McBride was phenomenal as a breakout tight end. They've got talent in the backfield. The offensive line is creeping back in the right direction. I think that the Cardinals could be a sneaky team to have a really good offense this year.
That's interesting. That's not one that I've heard. That is definitely a loan, which I'm not criticizing. I love it. The fact that you're out there on Arizona. What about in the AFC? I mean, it is, you know, like you said, kind of wide open, and Kansas City may make it back, but do you have a team that you don't think anybody's paying attention to that could potentially contend for a wild card spot?
It's tough in the AFC because so many teams are theoretically
true.
In that mix that are either incredibly good and everybody's already talking about them or are in that mix for that wild card spot. I mean, you know, Indianapolis was knocking on the door last season with Gardner Minshew at quarterback. Denver has Sean Payton and now has a quarterback that they like in Bo Nix. You know, they could potentially make some noise that people aren't really talking about. You know, we said before, like three out of the four teams in the East are firm playoff teams and firm contenders. I think the same thing is true for the North as well. And maybe all four of those teams, like it's difficult to find like an underrated, under the radar team in the AFC.
Last one. I'm a big believer that we learn very little from watching these preseason games. What, if anything, do you think you can take to heart in terms of it being transferable into the regular season?
Yeah, there's definitely not too much. You can learn little bits and pieces. I think individual performances are sometimes important, particularly the lower down the depth chart you go. You know, guys can win jobs and lose jobs in these preseason games. I think you can also start to glean some information relative to how a team is going to use somebody. You know, are they actually higher or lower on the depth chart than the sort of the quote-unquote official depth charts that are put out? You know, teams, those things are not necessarily accurate, and as soon as you hit preseason games, you start to realize actually this guy is further up than the team lists, so he's going to be used more. But in terms of, you know, this guy looks really good through two small preseason games, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, Zach Wilson looked fantastic in his rookie year in preseason, and Zach Wilson has been a disaster starting quarterback so far.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not going to tell you everything, but I think you can learn little bits and pieces.
Yeah, the Zach Wilson one is a good one. Kenny Pickett was outstanding in preseason his rookie year. Thanks for doing this. Congratulations on the move. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep. Sam Monson, everybody. Thanks to Sam. Thanks to Diana Russini, Jeff Ehrman, Ben Brown. Heavy guest day today. Back tomorrow. Chris Russell's up next. This segment coming up is sponsored by Floor & Decor. Unbeatable prices, unmatched in stock selection. Floor & Decor has more styles of laminate, vinyl, tile, wood, and stone. For anybody looking for the right look at the right price, that is. Your next beautiful space is at Floor & Decor. Jumping on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is Sam Monson. We've had Sam on the show many times. Sam was literally there, ground floor, when PFF launched many years ago, and he is leaving PFF to join the 33rd team. First of all, I guess congratulations are in order. That had to be tough because you and I have talked about this before. You were literally one of the first people there and helped build PFF. So just, if you can, share with us, you know, the move and the reasons for it.
Yeah, definitely tough. I mean, we did our last show today on the PFF NFL podcast, myself and Steve, and it was kind of like a history show of PFF and revisiting those early times and where it came from to where it is now. Definitely a crazy ride. I mean, I started doing stuff for PFF back in 2008. And I mean, it wasn't a company then. It was kind of like a financed hobby that Neil Hornsby had set up and eventually became this crazy preeminent analytics company that's in every, you know, all 32 front offices, all FBS team front offices, and is really everywhere. We didn't think we'd ever be leaving, but we get this great opportunity from the 33rd team. We're able to kind of restart our show and get, you know, real ownership over it and take it in a kind of new and better direction. So an opportunity that we felt we couldn't really turn down, and one that got us to leave PFF.
Yeah, so this podcast will launch with Steve Palazzo, who you've been doing a podcast for a while. And, you know, what you just said, it's so important in that world to kind of own that IP and have a stake in that. And so congratulations on that. You know, just real quickly, when you got there, and I forget because you've told me before, but had you just come to the U.S. from Ireland, or had you been here for a while?
No, this was when I did the first sort of few years, several years actually, of work in Ireland.
That's right.
Moving to the States came relatively recently in the whole PFF saga. I moved over here in the summer of 2017. So from 08 to 17 was all in Ireland, flying in for certain things, you know, making trips, but basically working from Ireland, and a lot of people were remote in the UK.
Yeah. I just got back, by the way, from my first trip to Ireland and absolutely loved it. Where are you from there?
Dublin. Dublin's where I'm from.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were in Dublin for a few days. Enjoyed it a lot. All right. Let's talk ball. What are your early impressions of Jaden Daniels and what he can be and what the team can be in 2024?
Yeah, I think early returns on Jaden Daniels have been fantastic. He looks great. We got to see a little bit more of him, obviously, in the second preseason game than we did in the first. But he looks efficient. It looks easy for him. And his ball location, I think, has been maybe the best of the young quarterbacks, just in terms of exactly where he's putting the football, not just hitting the right guy, but putting it on the correct shoulder, away from defenders' leverage, those kinds of things. The athleticism looks like it's going to play. They're using him in that area and giving him these read option plays. We've still seen, you know, a play where he's not protected himself, that maybe, you know, slide, you don't have to take a hit at the end of every single play. And that would be an area of concern for him given his college tape. But from a, can he handle it this level? Can he deliver the ball, execute the offense, throw it around efficiently? All of that, I think, looks good.
So what kind of team, what's best case, worst case for Washington this year?
Best case is, you know, Jaden Daniels looks spectacular. He's transformative because he's playing the most important position in the league. They have weaponry in terms of Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, De'Ami Brown, tight end, Zach Ertz. Like, this is a team that has the ability to make some noise as an offense. Dan Quinn has been a great defensive coach. He's done wonders in Dallas the last few years. If he's able to weave his magic quickly on the defensive side, they may be able to hold up their end of the bargain. And, you know, they could be a surprise package, maybe not a genuine contender, but really threaten the postseason, even in a tough division where we expect there to be at least two very good teams.
So what about the downside? What's the worst case?
The downside is there's so much change that it just takes a while to come together, you know, and it just doesn't gel year one, and we're almost treading water, or this is kind of a write-off season for next year to be the year where it really does start to pay dividends. But everything about this franchise has changed, you know, quarterback, coach, front office, so much personnel, a lot of kind of culture additions, guys coming in to just change the whole attitude of the place. So much change doesn't necessarily all come together right away. So there's definitely a world where it just doesn't quite, it's clunky, it doesn't quite all work year one. And, you know, next year is when we really start to see what happens.
You know, one of the things in kind of looking at their season total of 6.5, I mean, I like over. I actually think they could be one of the surprise, you know, sleeper teams. I think a lot of people have started to look at them as a potential, you know, not necessarily identical version of Houston from last year, but a team that, you know, threatens nine wins and contention for, you know, that six or seven spot wild card wise. But I was looking at something recently, Sam. Like, you know, if you consider a bad football team to be a five-win team or less, pretty much every example for the last 5 years, it meant terrible quarterback play. You know, and I don't see that. I could see up and down quarterback play from Jaden Daniels, but I don't see, with Kingsbury and some of the things they've got around him, I don't see it being bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to be a terrible football team if you have a good quarterback.
It really is.
And it's difficult. You know, quarterback can make that kind of transformational difference if you get the right guy. C.J. Stroud showed that last season. Now, you can kind of hinder a really good quarterback by having a terrible situation around him, and maybe you don't get to see that quarterback is great until he has the situation around him to function, but we just sort of went through it. I think that exists for Jaden Daniels. So if he's going to be the guy, there's no reason that can't function right away and from day one, at which point, yeah, I think you're right. Like, it means it's hard for this team to be truly terrible if Jaden Daniels looks like the answer right out of the gate.
Yeah, and even if he's not the answer, if he's typical rookie up and down, but, you know, that results in average, it is hard to be bad if you've got decent quarterback play or even average quarterback play. We're talking to Sam Monson. Sam's now with the 33rd team. And, you know, after years and years at PFF, pretty much helping to build it from the early days on. So, I don't know how much you're paying attention to this, but Washington has that second spot on the waiver wire because of last year's record. You know, Carolina's got one, Washington's got two. And we're now into that, you know, third year, I think it is, of 90 down to 53 on one day, which is this coming Tuesday. Washington's had major kicker issues. They signed Brandon McManus. He had those personal issues. They cut him loose. Do you pay attention at all to what might be available at any position come Tuesday with teams cutting down from 90 to 53?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some useful players that are going to be cut loose. A lot of them, teams are going to try and play that game of, you know, can we expose this guy to the waiver wire and try and get him onto the practice squad, or will he be poached away and signed to an active roster? I think that's always a gamble. But there are teams that are really strong in certain positions, and they're going to have to let a good player go because they have too many bodies, you know, too many players for too few roster spots. And that does mean there are teams that claim those players and actually can significantly upgrade their roster, albeit, you know, lower down the depth chart or maybe with those specialists, but definitely upgrade based off these releases.
Yeah, and I think we've seen in recent years too, Sam, a willingness to add more players because there's more time between that final cutdown date and the regular season opener. It used to be that it was basically a week or 8 days or 9 days. Now it's, you know, basically 2 weeks plus before, or right around 2 weeks before the opener. All right, let's talk a little bit about the league. Is Kansas City better this year than they were last year?
Possibly. I think they may be better on offense and worse on defense. And whether or not that shakes out to a net positive from a year ago, I think is up in the air. But last season's offense was not particularly good for the majority of the season. They got better in the playoffs. Travis Kelce kind of turned it on once they hit the postseason. Mahomes generally has been pretty good at improving his play in the playoffs, as crazy as that is. But for most of the season, they were struggling at the wide receiver position and actually receiver overall because Kelce wasn't quite the same player for most of the year. So that was a grind for them. And really the emergence of Rashee Rice late in the year and into the postseason was a big part of saving them, as well as Kelce stepping it up in the playoffs. But this was a team that needed receiver upgrades. And obviously they went ahead and made that happen in the offseason, both in free agency with Hollywood Brown, and then Xavier Worthy in the draft. So they should be better. They've added a lot of speed. They should be a much more dangerous offense than they were a year ago. But they've lost some players on defense. L'Jarius Sneed was a big player for them. Yeah. They were able to keep Chris Jones, but it's definitely, I think, difficult for them to repeat how good that defense was last season.
So if I told you right now they don't make it back to the Super Bowl, who in the AFC does?
I mean, for a couple of years now, the AFC has been so wide open. I think there's so many teams that could conceivably go on that run in the postseason and, you know, win four games, including a championship. Maybe Cincinnati would be the one that I would lean on because theoretically they're getting a healthy Joe Burrow again. Joe Burrow has been the quarterback that has been able to beat the Chiefs repeatedly. They're like one boneheaded play away from being undefeated against Kansas City, from knocking them off four straight times, I think. And really we would be talking about Cincinnati has the Chiefs number. Like, they're the team that is able to overcome that. So, you know, I think if we get Joe Burrow back healthy, if we get Ja'Marr Chase back in the building, I think the Bengals could definitely be the team to upset them in the playoffs.
How much pressure do you think there is on Lamar Jackson to get it done in the postseason this year? And by extension, and I've said this before because he's been, you know, Lamar's biggest fan and biggest supporter, John Harbaugh.
Yeah, I think Lamar and Dak Prescott are the two quarterbacks that this idea of them not being able to win in the playoffs is growing and becoming a bigger and bigger issue. And it's one that the only way of getting that monkey off your back is to win those playoff games. And neither one of those guys has been able to do that yet. You know, Lamar probably has an even more difficult task because he's in this AFC where we just talked about the gauntlet of good teams and how many teams are difficult to beat or capable of going on that run. So it may be more challenging for him to do it. But yeah, this is a two-time MVP now that needs to show that he can play his best games in the playoffs against the best opposition.
The Jets this year, if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy and plays like Aaron Rodgers, where do they end up?
That's the great question. I mean, we're going to get to see what we thought we were going to get to see last season. You know, Rodgers on the Jets, can he turn them into a genuine Super Bowl contender? Only now we have the added variable of a 40-year-old coming off an Achilles injury. I still think that if we get anything approximating a good version of a healthy Aaron Rodgers, they are a contender. You know, they're a playoff team. They're a team that should be able to win in the playoffs and are right in that mix of really good AFC teams that we talked about. They're capable of going through that gauntlet and making it through to that championship game.
Let's go to the NFC. Let's start in the division that Washington's in. Who do you like to win it?
I think Dallas probably ends up winning it. Ultimately, there's so much talent on that roster. I think they'll figure out the contract situations and whether or not they're playing in their last year, or they get them all under contract and everybody's happy long-term. I think the Cowboys are going to find a way of essentially maintaining what they did a year ago and heading the division.
In the NFC, San Francisco is the favorite. Do you think they get back to the Super Bowl and finally win it?
I think they certainly get back to the championship game. I think Detroit may give them a real fight and may challenge them, and they were a couple plays away from it last year. Maybe this is the year it goes in a different direction and the Lions are the team to upset San Francisco along the way, but certainly the 49ers are going to be as good a team as anybody in the NFC.
Who wins the NFC South?
I think Atlanta does. I think as soon as they signed Kirk Cousins, they became the favorite for that division, both literally, you know, the Vegas line suggests that way, and also just from a subjective point of view, I think Cousins on that team makes them the best team in that division.
Who's a sleeper team in the NFC that nobody's talking about that you're bullish on?
I think Arizona could be. Kyler Murray, Marvin Harrison Jr. coming onto that team, that improves everything. That lets Michael Wilson take a step down the depth chart, and he was impressive last season. Now he doesn't have to be their number one guy. He can just beat up on number two corners. Trey McBride was phenomenal as a breakout tight end. They've got talent in the backfield. The offensive line is creeping back in the right direction. I think that the Cardinals could be a sneaky team to have a really good offense this year.
That's interesting. That's not one that I've heard. That is definitely a loan, which I'm not criticizing. I love it. The fact that you're out there on Arizona. What about in the AFC? I mean, it is, you know, like you said, kind of wide open, and Kansas City may make it back, but do you have a team that you don't think anybody's paying attention to that could potentially contend for a wild card spot?
it's tough in the AFC because so many teams are theoretically in that mix that are either incredibly good and everybody's already talking about them or are in that mix for that wild card spot. I mean, you know, Indianapolis was knocking on the door last season with Gardner Minshew at quarterback. Denver has Sean Payton and now has a quarterback that they like in Bo Nix. You know, they could potentially make some noise that people aren't really talking about. You know, we said before, like three out of the four teams in the East are firm playoff teams and firm contenders. I think the same thing is true for the North as well. And maybe all four of those teams, like it's difficult to find like an underrated, under the radar team in the AFC.
Last one. I'm a big believer that we learn very little from watching these preseason games. What, if anything, do you think you can take to heart in terms of it being transferable into the regular season?
Yeah, there's definitely not too much. You can learn little bits and pieces. I think individual performances are sometimes important, particularly the lower down the depth chart you go. You know, guys can win jobs and lose jobs in these preseason games. I think you can also start to glean some information relative to how a team is going to use somebody. You know, are they actually higher or lower on the depth chart than the sort of the quote-unquote official depth charts that are put out? You know, teams, those things are not necessarily accurate, and as soon as you hit preseason games, you start to realize actually this guy is further up than the team list, so he's going to be used more. But in terms of, you know, this guy looks really good through two small preseason games, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, Zach Wilson looked fantastic in his rookie year in preseason, and Zach Wilson has been a disaster starting quarterback so far. Yeah. So it's definitely not going to tell you everything, but I think you can learn little bits and pieces.
Yeah, the Zach Wilson one is a good one. Kenny Pickett was outstanding in preseason his rookie year. Thanks for doing this. Congratulations on the move. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, Sam Monson, everybody. Thanks to Sam. Thanks to Diana Russini, Jeff Ehrman, Ben Brown. Heavy guest day today. Back tomorrow. Chris Russell's up next.